It's time for Breaking Chain with Healthy Monday, where we will discuss spiritual, mental, and physical health issues. It's Breaking Chain with Healthy Monday on YAT Radio.
Breaking Chains is Healthy Mondays. I am Reverend Roderick Williams, pastor of the Young Adults Talk Family Ministries. I'd like to welcome you to Healthy Mondays, heard every Monday right here, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. And man, I tell you, tonight we're talking about mental illness, and we're going to get deep into this conversation. I'd like to introduce and welcome our co-hosts of the evening, Bo and Sheena Williams, the king and queen of their era there over. And I tell you, how y'all doing? Y'all there? Hey.
Hey. Yeah, how you doing, brother? How are beautiful people doing out there this evening? Like you said, we got a wonderful show for you guys tonight. So tune in, grab a seat, get comfortable. We're going to
share
with a lot of good information.
That's good. Mental illness, brother, I tell you, it's something that has been absent from the dinner table, from the couch, from just pillow talk, laying in the bed. We do not talk about mental illness in our communities. We don't want to talk about it because the stigma of it is that you crazy, something wrong with you, all this crazy stuff that goes on. And I want to throw this out, and I want to turn over the prevalence of mental illness. Approximately 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. experience mental illness in a given year. Approximately 1 in 25 adults in the U.S., 9.8 million, experience serious mental illness in a given year that substantially interferes with or limits one or major life activities. Approximately 1 in 5 youth ages 13 to 18 experience severe mental disorder at some point during their life. 1.1% of adults in the U.S. live with schizophrenia. 2.6% of adults in the U.S. live with bipolar disorder. 6.9% of adults in the U.S. have at least one major depressive episode. 18.1% of adults in the U.S. experience anxiety disorder as post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and among 20.2 million adults in the U.S. experience substance abuse disorder, which also has a co-occurring mental illness status. So that's some serious stats there, brother.
Right. That's a lot of stuff you name right there. And basically, we need to start talking about these issues. Our community, and believe it or not, those stats that you just said, our community is still underrepresented because a lot of people don't report when they're having problems.
That's right.
So those stats are a little more worse than what they are because a lot of people go through their whole life. They may suffer from depression. They may suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, any of those other disorders that you named, and they still will never get diagnosed because they might not go to the, they might not seek help. They might not how to seek help. They might not know where to go. And most people, most of our people, especially in poverty, and which is a root of a lot of these mental disorders,
they
don't
have
any insurance to go see anybody about anything.
That's right.
So it's hard for our people. And like we were saying last week, we're going to have to start getting our leaders trained a little bit on how to identify when somebody needs some help, you know, because that's essentially where our people go to, you know. My belief, and like I say, this may not have no scientific evidence behind it, but I think first we go to the women of our community. Women go to the women, our kids go to the women, and the men go to the women, you know, trying to get some psychological help, even though we may not know what's going on, but inevitably we go to our women and our leaders. So our pastors, our community leaders, our the people that fashion themselves mentors, you know, brothers and sisters of the community. And if we're not equipped or trained well enough to help somebody, then our help can be a hindrance.
That's right.
As in the case of telling somebody to go pray about it. You know, there's no way you can pray depression away. You know, there's no way you can pray anxiety. You know, you may be able to pray anxiety orders away because you're going to a calm place and stuff. But, you know, if a pastor doesn't know, he doesn't know. And he should say so. But that should be a duty of his to go get at least a little bit of know-how, you know, know a little bit about what's going on. Listen to shows like this to be able to educate himself a little bit about how to get people some help, especially in our communities, and that's where our people tend to go to for that type of help. As you know, if there's a death in the family, the first place somebody goes to, and I know the churches are good at this, most of them, I believe, grievance counseling. So when you have a death in the family, they know how to deal with somebody who's grieving. But what about after? You know, what about a year later when that person's going through some depression or going through some funk or going through anxiety, kids going through different mental disorders that they might not want to get help for because our kids get labeled, you know. So how can we help them out? So bottom line is, like you're saying, bottom line is getting that stigma off of, get it disassociated with mental health in our community and get people talking about it. And that's the number one thing that we can do.
And you're absolutely correct, because it's something that never really gets discussed. And you were talking about leaders and pastors going to get trained in these areas. It's something that I did. I went to college, and one of the things that I took up was human services. And human services walked through all of these areas of a bipolar disorder, mental disorders, substance abuse disorders, knowing how to identify it, knowing how to confront it. And if you're not skilled in those areas, let's give an example. If someone comes in from the streets or something and they're going through some things, if you're not able to identify those issues just by talking to them and what is it, body language, eye contact, the way that their speech, if you're not able to identify those areas, this person comes in, talks to you, and they leave out the same way, because you're not able to identify what it is that they're dealing with. So there's no way that you can help them. And what you said was powerful, because if there is some leaders or pastors or somebody that don't deal in those areas, they should have someone aboard their staff that can help people. Because one thing that I learned growing up is that the church is supposed to be the hospital for everybody. For whatever you're dealing with, you're supposed to be able to go there. And unfortunately, I'm going to say this, the church is not that house anymore. A lot of churches have turned away from helping people to robbing people. Well, you know, I got to just keep it 100. You know, I got to keep it 100. A lot of the pastors have turned into the pulpit pimps, pimping the people for the money. Right. And this is not all of them, but there are a lot of them that are going through this and dealing with this. And it's all about, it's like a, what did you want to say? It's all about a me thing. And you know, you can't be about a me thing if you got people that you have to service. See, I know getting into ministry that I have to service the people. You know what I'm saying? I got to service the people. It's not about me. It's about how can I help you? And then I know my help is going to come. So we have to walk into this, and I appreciate you and your wife, man, for stepping up to the plate and let's talking about these things on Mondays, because they are not talked about in our communities. They're not. And when you said it just 100, these stats are not accurate, because there are a lot of people in poverty, in low poverty areas, that can't seek the assistance of medical attention because they don't have the money, they don't have the insurance. And, you know, if I got to go just a little deeper on that, I think society is set up, the 1% is already set up to disengage the people that are in low poverty areas to just let you die out, actually. They want you to really just die out. Let's keep it real with this now. They want you to die out so they don't have to. They don't have to spend money on trying to take care of you anymore. They don't have to try to put you on food stamps anymore, and Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security. You can see the big 1%, the big government trying to wipe all of that out so they don't have to take care of you. And when you do this to people, you put more people in harm's way. You put more mental illness on a person by doing that, and they see this taking place. They're not going to help me, so guess what I feel? I feel depressed. I feel angry. I get schizophrenia going on because my mind is racing and I want to do something. I can't do something. So I go into this bipolar disorder. I go into all of this. I pick up the substance abuse problem. I pick up all these things because I'm seeking a way out. You won't help me, so I'm going to figure my own way out. And my own way out is killing me, and that's what you want to do anyway.
Yeah. Definitely. And you said a lot right there, brother. And definitely, we could see it in everyday life. They don't have commercials teaching us how to prevent these things from happening. So they don't have commercials. They're not actively in our communities trying to get our young brothers and sisters jobs, trying to create jobs for those who, if they don't have a job, there's no jobs in the community, then we should be creating jobs. So there's nobody actively in our communities doing that for us to get to the root cause of things. And there's no campaigns on TV telling our people to seek help. How can we seek help? There's not many clinics. There's not many brothers and sisters out there saying, look, you can come to my clinic. Mondays are free, or we got some free visits for those who can't afford, you know, or We got a sliding scale, so pay what you can, when you can, or something like that. So those kids, but they do that for other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they want to give you some medication, they'll do it with the quickness. You know, give you a sliding scale, let you get a discount on it.
Mm-hmm.
But for some help or to talk to our people. And another thing I want to touch on, and we'll probably have a segment for it, is when our people do go seek help, they're not met with love. They're met with,
right,
with glaring eyes of judgment. You know, they cast judgment on us. You know, when I grew up in group homes and foster homes, so they used to always send me to the psychiatrists, counselors, all type of things. And what I noticed is that they judge me before I even open my mouth, because the way I look, the way I dress, I got my hoodie on, I got my hoodie off, you know. Of course, I don't want to be, so they judge me off of that. And then when they sit down and talk to me, they can't relate to me in any type of way. So when I'm talking about my homies, when I'm talking about my peoples, my folks from the street, they looking at me crazy. They don't even know my lingo. They couldn't imagine growing up where I grew up at. So they just can't culturally relate to me. So cultural competency in this field is needed for our people. One of the facts, and I'm gonna try to pull it up, is that our people, black people, especially people in poverty, when they do seek help, they never, or they're not likely to follow through with it. So they might go to one or two visits, but that's it. You know, because of the judgment, because of the way the doctor looks at them, because he can't connect with them. And
right.
What ends up, and especially for those who don't want to take the medicine, because the medicine, they know a lot of this medicine is no good for us, and we want to get away from that anyway, so they try to go seek help without medication, and it's not made easy for them then. And then on the other hand, the doctors who love to prescribe medication, you see me one time, I told you two or three things about me, and all of a sudden, now you put me on sleeping pills, you put me on this, you put me on that. You're not saying change your diet and maybe you could get some sleep. You're not saying get those negative people out of your mind, because you're great. You're a beautiful person. So I mean, it's so many issues when it comes to mental health, especially with our people. And,
and
like I said, we could definitely cover these issues, but I want to hop back to the churches real fast. Brother, I never, ever... let me say that again. I always wondered why or how it could be that a church is closed 6 days or 5 days a week. I've never understood that, brother. Especially now as an adult, and I know about the nonprofit game. I know that a lot of stuff is tax deductible. It's like, man, I see these churches closed on a Thursday when they could be doing health, doing a health class, health education. They're closed on Tuesdays and they could be doing community unity bonding.
Right.
You know,
amen
to
that.
Of our people, they used to bring stuff to the market. They had free markets where I bring some stuff out my house, they bring some stuff out their house, and we trade and we barter and say, oh yeah, I do need a lamp. You know, all these clothes are too little for my kids. You can have all these clothes. I'll take that lamp, or I'll take that old couch set. You know, it's so many things that and like I say, I don't want to make it seem like I attack the church, but like I say, the church is like almost the cornerstone of our community. That's where black people
it's supposed
gather
to be.
Once a week. So this is why I always take it back to the church. Those are our main leaders. When these politicians want the community to vote, they go right to the church, so they know where the power is at, and that's who has the influence over the community. And if our elders get into it, they can push it down to our youngsters. Our youngsters can make it, can normalize it, you know. So doing stuff for the community on a daily basis, you know, putting some showers in these churches so people, you know, I don't know, it's so much stuff to do. But as far as mental health, the pastors know to a degree that all their people come to them. And everything won't be spiritual, you know. Some stuff is physical, you know. Pastor, you know, I ain't been feeling good. If I'm a 350-pound man and I come to the pastor talking about my knees hurt, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, we're going to pray to Jesus that your knees feel better. I'm going to say, you know what, brother? You know, Thursday night is health night. I want you to come and we're doing a light workout. You know, or I got Brother Johnson over here in the church. He does health and fitness. I want you to see him first and then come back to me, and then we could talk. You know, so I'm talking about realistic issues, solutions to a lot of our health issues in our communities can start right in the church. And I don't want to put it all on a pastor, but as a pastor, you kind of took that on. You took on the burden of the whole flock. You know, you took that burden on, and it's up to you to make those differences.
And you know what, brother? And it's not you attacking the church. Let me say that first and foremost. That's not what you're doing. What you're doing is bringing awareness. This is called awareness. Yeah. What we do on this podcast is bring awareness. We bring attention to things that are troubling the community. And what you're saying is actually correct, because you have that question, and guess what? I ask the same questions to pastors. Why aren't you open? Why I can't get in the church, but just on Wednesday night prayer service and Sunday morning service,
right.
Sunday school? Right. What goes on the other nights? So you're talking
right.
about the bills got to be paid and all this. Well, me personally, my faith is strong. So I know if I'm out here helping the community and servicing the people, all that's going to get taken care of anyway, because we
right.
serve a God that's going to supply all your needs. So my thing is that, okay, you say all of that. So here's a suggestion that I'm putting out in the world wide web between you and I and your wife right now. This is what we're going to do. Let's sit down. Matter of fact, y'all are already home. When we get off this podcast, let's sit down and put together our plan and start bringing this type of just start bringing these solutions to the community. Because one thing about it is that usually, most of the time, it just takes one person to get up and say, hey, here I am, I'm going to do this, and then others join in. So let's make a way to put together some things where we can do this for the community. Maybe we just have to go here and go there. Maybe we're going to have to be one of those ministries that's got to move all over the city. And that's okay with me.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
Yeah.
But we need to do this, because we can't just sit here on a podcast and talk about it and with each other, and we're not affecting the community. This is a great start.
Yeah.
But now once we start here, we got to take it to the next level. Well, you know, we talking about it now. We getting it out. It's just like talking about racism, things that nobody wants to talk about. Nobody wants to sit down and talk about their mental health issues, because everybody got mental health issues. All of us do. We're dealing with something in life that is affecting us mentally. May not be, you may not have a mental health illness, but you do have a mental health issue. Because one thing about it is that it's going to touch you mentally, and if it's so strong, it can bother your health. It can bother the way that you eat, the way that you drink, the things that you put into your body. Listen, like I said earlier, people that are dealing with things out here on the streets, what do they go after the most? They go after substance and get into substance abuse problems.
Mm-hmm.
They go after
yes.
alcohol, and they get into alcoholism. Yes, so, you know, those are the things that they find that define their loose niche where they can find some comfort for a minute. You know what I'm saying? If I get drunk, I'm going to feel better for a minute. I may have a hangover in the morning, but right now I ain't got to deal with it. I'm going to get high. I ain't got to deal with it right now. It's going to go down. So when I come down, I'm looking again to get back up there. So I won't have to face these issues. So I agree with you. We got to start somewhere, and this is a perfect place where we're starting. But now it's time that we got to take this thing to the streets. We got to bring it to the leaders. We got to take it to the government. Because, listen, society ain't going to like what we're doing, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that, because they don't want us educating the people. They didn't want you to do it back in the day when our people were held in bondage and slavery all these years. They didn't want you to read. They didn't want you to know how to write. They didn't want you to understand anything. And so here we are today. We got so many black people that are rich and wealthy, but they don't reach back and help nobody, and they do little things to get the accolades, but they're not doing the big things to make the changes. See, we can change things now. You know, we can make some changes now. If we could just say, hey, we want every black person to stop spending money for 48 hours, I guarantee you, 48 hours will make a world of a difference in this world right here. If every black person say, well, I ain't spending money for the whole weekend, I ain't going to spend no money, don't you know what's going to happen if that takes place? They know what's going to happen, but our people don't understand that. They don't understand the power that we have over this country. We built this country on our shoulders, blood, sweat, and tears. So if we built it, we put it together, don't you know if we pull our money back, we can stop everything in its tracks right now?
Right.
We can stop it right now.
Yeah.
We buying all that garbage food out of stores. They put all the jacked up meats and bad vegetables and everything in the black community. But I guarantee you, go drive out there on Schillinger Road out there. You've got the prettiest vegetables and fruit and the freshest everything out there. But come over here at 3.
Got 10, 15
come on,
beauty shops right next to each other. It's ridiculous.
Come on, now.
Yeah.
And then we got to hold these banks accountable, because why are you giving loans for this? Because I know some of our folks who filling out loans and they getting them. But I see, like I said, beauty supply stores popping up after the fact. And this is who you're leasing to. So we need to hold those people accountable as well.
Yeah, well, we need to hold everybody accountable. But see, accountability is not something that's in society's vocabulary. They don't hold nobody accountable. They let each other steal from each other and steal and rob from us, and they're not going to say anything. They don't care about that. As long as you ain't saying nothing and bringing it to their table, they definitely ain't going to sit down and talk about it at their table.
Right.
Exactly.
And like I say, our power is in unity. If we collectively throw our dollars this way or that way or keep them to ourselves,
that's right.
Our power, we got power. We have that power. And like I say, with our votes, if we say, look, man, all our people, my whole collective has signed this paper and said they vote in the way I vote, you got power.
That's right.
But it takes unity in our community. You know, it takes. We've been healing for 400 years and trying to get, you know, man, we've been trying to heal our people from all the infirmities that we've faced over these years, and we're still in the healing process. It's time for us to step up to the plate and take some action, you know, and we've seen it can be done. We got examples from other countries. We got examples from right here, you know, when we collectively come together and say we're tired, we make a difference, you know. Mobile, it was before my time, but they were calling it Black Christmas. You might be able to speak a little bit about it. And I think it was Mobile. My native Mobilians, don't give me any hate mail, but I'm trying to get the facts straight. But it was during the time when Martin Luther King's birthday wasn't they weren't giving it off to people in Mobile. So they said, you know what, we're not going to spend any money during Christmas in Mobile. And so it was called Black Christmas, where nobody spent any money and everybody came together. And that following year, they gave, they wrote it into law where Mobilians be able to get Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday off. Is that accurate?
That sounds somewhat accurate. But, you know, Mobile has been an advocate for a lot of things that took place. Here's one that was that a lot of people say unfortunate. Mobile leaders back in the day stood up and denied entrance to Mobile from Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. Martin Luther King couldn't come to Mobile. When he landed, they went to the airport and told him to get back on his plane. He wasn't wanted here. So there are a lot of things that Mobilians are capable of doing, but the unfortunate thing was during that time, the Mobile leaders, a lot of them were sold out to the white man anyway. The unfortunate thing today is that we still act as though we fear someone. Don't know who you're supposed to be scared of, but, you know, that has put on a lot of mental issues for a lot of people, not just in Mobile, but the South period. The South period still suffers more than any other area in the North, the East, or the West. The South down here still suffers because the Jim Crow laws still exist. And the thing about it is that it's a lot of the elder black people that still live, and they still have that fear. So that fear has kind of bled over into their families, because those generations, people don't believe that they are generational curses. Those generational curses still exist. And the unfortunate thing is that there are some people that would love to be able to say, okay, let's not spend money. There's some people here locally that still believe in that. And there are not enough people that are willing to step up to the plate and do these things because they figure that I need this, I need that, I need this. But see, there's no one educating them on, hey, like you all saying, hey, this is how you grow your own food. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That family member no longer lives. So the one that was supposed to inherit that knowledge rejected that knowledge.
Yeah.
So we still got to run to Publix and Winn-Dixie and Piggly Wiggly, not giving them no accolades. But, you know, these stores and Whole Foods that charge an arm and a leg for food because it's supposed to be healthy. But, you know, we don't know anymore what they're putting in our food. We know that they are tainting it down with something. Food is not what it used to be. There's no way I could go buy a chicken and the chicken look like a turkey. So, you know, you're doing things to our food. There's no reason why my apples got to look like, you know, they're turning like lemons yellow in a couple of days. So, you know, there are a lot of things that are going on, even with the milk. You know, you shooting steroids in cows and they giving out milk. I used to tell people, when you eat ice cream, how do you feel the next morning? In your nose running and you got cold in your throat? And nobody believed me when I said that. And some people took the test and was like, man, I feel all congested. It's because you drinking stuff and eating stuff that is not supposed to be in you. You're not a cow.
Right.
So why are you drinking something coming from a cow? But, you know, I was wrong for saying that, let people tell it. You know, I ain't no cow, so a cow can't milk me. But, you know.
Right. And like you say, brother, it's all about educating yourself and then having the gusto to actually make a difference in your own life and let it affect your family, community, and the nation. Like you say, we don't control none of that. You can ask most black people don't even know who inspects the meat, the process of the meat. They haven't took the time to think about what they put in the meat, what ingredients. Haven't took the time to look on the back of their current food, their bread, and see what the ingredients are in there and what those ingredients, the effect that it has on your body. And only when we start collectively as a people controlling our own industries will we show a concern in that, and we can make a difference. When we have our own dairy, you know, we don't even what you just said is right on point, because scientifically, black people, African people, people from African descent, most of us are lactose intolerant. Most of us can't even take milk, and our bodies, we're not supposed to be drinking milk. Like I say, it makes us mucousy. Most of us get gas. People think, oh, it's just gas from milk. I drink a little milk, and you'll get a little. No, you're not supposed to get gas when you. That means stuff in your stomach is not mixing. That means you got extra gas in your stomach that's going to your intestines, so on and so forth. It's not just a little, you know, it's just not just a little gas. That's not supposed to be going in your body. And they market it to us the most, you know, like I say, with WIC.
Yeah.
Most parents go get WIC. They say, go get your WIC. And they give you so much milk, so much milk on WIC. They give the kids, even with the WIC, they give the kids so much juice. They know that it's so much high fructose corn syrup and other sugars in these juice. Even if it says 100% juice, it still has a lot of sugar and fructose corn syrup. And they're literally telling us to give it to our kids versus giving us more fruits and vegetables. So we do have to believe. People may say it's a conspiracy theory. People may make assumptions, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. But we do have to believe the government doesn't care about the poor as much as it cares about everybody else. I don't want to make
how
it a race because some poor white people too. But, you know, otherwise
but
they
how
would
can
be
they?
Actively. They,
mm-hmm. But seriously, how can they? Why would they? They say that we weren't even more important than a dog. So, you know, we less important than a dog.
Aspect. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the sad part about it is, like you said, with the steroids, just think about the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. There's no way that the food and the drug should be mixed together at all.
Right.
So we already know that something is terribly wrong there.
But that means
They're basically telling me that with the food and drug industry, which should be separate, you're basically telling me that you guys are in bed together. So even if you did want to stop putting hormones and different things in our meat, the cows and the chickens and the pigs, you don't have the reason to, because the drug and the food industry are married.
Yeah.
They're the same. Why cut our business short? Why
That's
not?
Right.
We want to sell these drugs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a lot of these drugs are brand new. Haven't even had the time to study them.
Yeah.
A lot of these drugs, they already know the harmful effect that they have on our body. It's up to us, my people out there. It's up to us to educate yourself a little bit and start making those changes every single day for our whole health. Our mental health will improve with our when our diet improves. Our physical health, our well being, our energy, our nails are clear up, our eyes are clear up. So many different things happen when you start consciously putting food in your body to build your body instead of tearing it down.
And positive,
like I say, and you'll just be a more positive person. And know these industries, know they have it's a book that me and my wife are currently reading. By Joy the Guru, and that's DeGruy, and it's called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And our people, and white people and black people have this, and it's just our people have it to where we bring those habits from slavery down into our daily lives. We pass down that gentle. We can break this generational curse at any time.
Yeah, we can.
Any generation can do it. I've broke a couple generational curses on my family just by me doing what I'm doing. All I got to do is make it to my 60s, and I broke another, for real. If I make it to my 60s, I broke another generational curse for my family. But seriously, we're passing down these bad habits, these negative ways of thinking, right to our children, and especially in the Bible Belt Deep South. And
that's right.
Our children are going to pass it down. I'm going to give you one example, and you can agree with this. The word churn, which means children in the South, churn. I hear little kids in school saying churn. Look at them churn over there. It's like, come on, guys. It's children or kids or child, you know. Come on, say that one word, the adult. Our grandmothers that were uneducated and that couldn't go to school, weren't allowed to read. Our great-grandmothers have passed. They took that, the slave language, so to speak, and they're passing it down to our kids. And our kids, and not knowing that if we're speaking, we're going to call it Ebonics. If we're speaking Ebonics at home, and our kids are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we expect to put our kids into a school, a public school system, to where they're expected to speak this perfect English, we've already did a disservice to our kids.
That's
right. We've already done a disservice, and that's, like I say, we're passing the negative things down that ought not be. And I'm not telling people to, you have to talk perfect or you have to have, but for our kids' sake, we need to be teaching them the right way.
I'm going to say something to that. It's not even, we all speak slang. I'm just going to say that. But being able to turn it on and turn it off
right.
is the most important thing.
Right.
Because every ethnicity has their own language. But like I said, you have to
That's
be able
right.
to turn that on and off. If you can't decipher the difference between the two, then you need not even engage in that.
Exactly.
Because you won't be able to communicate in the real world. It will be harder for you in school, and, you know, It's not a good thing to do. So, like I said, you have to be able to decipher the two and explain that to them.
Mm-hmm. And I agree, because it does have a mental impact on them. It has a serious
yeah.
mental impact on them. And the thing about it is something that I try not to do anymore. When I reference children, that's what I want to reference them as, children. I don't
mm-hmm.
even try. I try to stay away from kids, because kids are actually
yeah.
baby goats.
Those
so you know,
yeah.
baby goats. So you know,
yeah.
I don't see a bunch of baby goats. I see a bunch of children. So I have to make sure that I correct myself and catch myself, so that if nothing else, we, like you say, we all speak a little slang, but we have to know how to speak proper English. You know what I'm saying? We have to know how to speak it. If you know other languages, great. But speaking proper English is good for teaching and training up your child. Because whatever the children hear, whatever they see, they're going to pick up on it and they're going to carry and they're going to do something with it because they see you doing something with it. So and it has a strong mental impact on them. And how can you get mad at them? Well, mom and dad, you do it. And so what are you doing to your children after that? You know what I'm saying? It's hard to chastise a child, and you're doing it, and that's who they got it from. So we have to get back to educating out, like you said, brother, educating ourselves, but then we have to educate our children. But you know what I'm saying? In the meantime, you talk about breaking those generational curses. They can be done. It's not an impossible task. It can be done, but you got to be you got to be dedicated to what you're doing. And I think a lot of dedication is not faith is not placed on the family anymore. A lot of dedication is put into what's on the television, what's on the radio, into materialistic things, the new tennis shoes, the new outfit, the way I need to wear my clothes, the new hairdo. It's always something, because when you look at our young people today and you look at an old picture of a slave man, you will see that his hair is basically the same way. This is not to degrade anybody, but our children are going backwards instead of moving forward in life, and we are allowing that to take place. And we should say something. Listen, we all got a fad. We all have a style, so forth and so on. But, you know, one thing about it is I never was good with seeing a young man get up in the morning and all he do is just pull his hair. He don't do nothing else about it. They get mad at me because I make reference to that. But, you know, a black woman created the comb and the hair pick. Use it. You know what I'm saying? She created it for us so that we can get those naps out that they wouldn't let us when we was in slavery comb our hair. They wouldn't let us touch us. They barely let us take a bath. So now that you have all of these accessories available to you, you don't want to use them now. You don't want to take a bath. You don't want to comb your hair. You don't want to wash your hair. You wanna. You don't even want to wear pants no more. Why put? I asked a man one day, why you wearing pants, son? You got all your pants hanging off your butt. All I see is your boxers. Why you putting on clothes? You know what I'm saying? Walk down the street naked then, if that's the case. You know, so and like it's a lot of things like that.
And I'm a believer in letting kids express themselves. So,
of course.
When I see the hair and stuff, I'm like, okay, that person is expressing himself. But like you said, with that, a lot of the brothers I do see that are, I want to say raggedy looking kind of, they act as such, they act raggedy, they talk raggedy, and it's not just the hairstyle, it's not just I want that rugged look. You got to act rugged and act ignorant with it, you know what I'm saying? So
You can tell the difference.
Even me, I come from a culture where we sag our pants, and even now, my pants. Somebody might see me, and I didn't let my belt loose a little bit, and or I'm slipping a little bit, and it might, you know. But I don't. You'll never see my drawers. It's like have some pride in yourself. You know what I'm saying? Pride, and I also see the other side of the table is like. Where you have to make laws. I hate laws against sagging pants. Especially in California, that's like almost discrimination, making up laws because you know that our young men and our women do
that's
that.
That's right.
And I think once you get into laws, it's like how do you decipher? Now, if you see a young lady walking down the street and this is especially in California, you see a young lady walking down the street and she has her underwear showing, but it's pleasant looking. Do we say, look, charge her too? Because her drawers are also showing? Or her shorts are too short? Oh, no, we can't have too short shorts in our neighborhood. So I think that's just an unfair law against our brothers.
It is.
And I think it's up to us as a community to let our brothers know what me and my wife were talking about, like a black code of sorts, where I don't know. It's so much stuff going through my head right now. But a black culture where, you know, black people, we are upstanding people. And we don't have to fit into no type of box. You don't have to wear no suit and fit, you know, look like this person or that person or adhere to European standards. But, you know, when you're around your people, when you represent your people good, you know. Me and my wife noticed today, this is something new that we noticed, and we kind of had a little theory on it. I wanted to share with everybody, and this has to do with mental health. we in the hood, in our communities, in our poverty-stricken communities, we see brothers and sisters acting crazy, so to speak, for a lack of better words. Matter of fact, I'm not going to use that word since we're talking about mental health. We see our brothers and sisters in the street.
No, dysfunctional.
Indulging in ignorance, being irresponsible.
Right.
And, you know, our sisters and brothers, like I say, right here, yelling and arguing, cussing the kids right there, and cussing, fighting. And it's like, man, I know that young lady wouldn't be doing that if she was in a courtroom. I know she wouldn't be doing that if she was in the presence of her grandmother, her mother on her deathbed. There would be nothing in the world to make you yell that loud if you were in a courtroom or sitting with your grandmother. So why do you act like this around in certain situations where you are expected to act like this in the hood, in areas where it's accepted? And I was thinking that they don't have respect for the people around them, and they don't have respect for themselves, or lack respect. Because like I said, you won't do it in front of a judge, and why? Because you have so much respect for that judge that you won't let nobody bother you that much to make you act a fool and yell and cuss in front of kids, in front of a judge or somebody you respect. So it's like, it's almost like you don't respect your own people because you'll do this in front of your people. You know, you respect your mom enough not to act a fool in front of her. You probably not let anything let you act this way in front of your mother or your grandmother or somebody that you respect. So why do it in the hood? It's because you don't respect the people around you. You don't respect yourself enough to get the respect in other people, but you respect these other cultures, these Europeans that are in high. You know, you wouldn't act like that if you were seeing a lawyer about your car crash. You would act well, decent. And I say that's the underlying problem, is we don't respect our people. We don't have that love so much for our people that we'll say, you know what, I ain't going to act like this. You got it. You won the argument. I'm out of here. You know, so
exactly.
I think the bottom line for that is our people, again, unity, our people, loving our people, having a respect for your brothers and sisters, loving them, genuinely having a love and wanting to see them do well and see them do good, genuinely, you know.
Right.
And that hate for each other goes back to what I was saying earlier about the post-traumatic slave syndrome.
That's right.
So many tricks were studied. They used to study how to break a slave, how to turn a slave into a Christian, how to make subservient servants of these slaves, because again, they paid for this. This was an investment, so they didn't just want to kill you off. They would, and they wouldn't care about it, but you know, they got to where we were sort of investment. They wanted to train us right, so they started putting little tricks. We're giving little people power over here, you know, making us hate ourselves, making us less than human, you know, telling us y'all ain't even human. Y'all just the disgrace of God. God accidentally made y'all, and that's how y'all got on the earth to serve us. So a lot of the things they forced on us, we regurgitated that, and we passed it down as a generational curse. So a lot of people hate being black. They may not know it, but they hate everything about their black selves, you know, or like I say, our natural hair, our natural skin, our noses, our lips. A lot of people hate that.
Yeah, that's why they're changing themselves.
Exactly. So if you hate that, you can't possibly love the people around you, possibly can't love yourself. So it's about getting that love and putting that love back in our communities, in our life.
You know, my friend had a post the other day about, you know, how come when you ask a black person, you know, let's go to Africa, it's always, no, I don't want to go there, whatever, versus let's go to Paris and everybody's game to go. That's the post-traumatic slave syndrome that we don't even know that we're suffering from.
I was about to say the funny part, but it's not funny, so I won't use that, so forgive me. The sad case to all of that is, here's the sadness to it, is that, listen, Africa is the motherland. That's where everything came from. That's where the existence of the world came from, out of Africa. That's where man and woman come from. Here's the thing, though, is that you don't want to go back there because they have taught you to hate yourself. So you hate yourself. You hate everything black. You buy all of the hair. You don't want your natural hair. You put all of the weave. You change your color. You change your face. You want a new nose. You want more butt cheeks. You want all of these things. You want to change everything about you. But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker right here. And this is not to offend, but this is just honest to God's truth. when the white man dies, he has to be buried so quickly that his true natural color comes back, which is what?
Mm-hmm.
Black.
Black.
He doesn't want anyone to see him in his natural color. So you have to hurry up and bury him because he will be back to his natural. Matter of fact, he will be dark just like us or darker.
Yeah.
So
everybody
changes colors but us because we are that color. And the other minority, they call us minorities. And we're not really minorities. They have they in our head too. We are not the minority.
Mm-hmm.
We are the majority. But however, the mental illness of the situation. Now we're talking about a mental illness because you have conditioned the mind to constantly believe this, and the mind has believed this for so many years that it's ill now, that it doesn't know anything else but what you have put in there for it to believe. If you constantly make me start hating myself, I will forever hate myself. I wouldn't like anything about me. So what I will wind up doing is killing myself because of what you have made me feel, which takes on that mental illness term because suicide is a part of a mental illness. People take themselves out because of something that they're dealing with that they can't face. They don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to get answers to the questions that have haunted them for so long. And this chronic medical condition is going unnoticed in the African-American community. The black community is suffering the most because, you know, when you look around, you have more brothers walking the streets as if they have lost their mind. They don't know where they're going. They don't know what they're doing. And there's no one picking them up off the streets to assist them, giving them medical attention, or even just to sit them down and find out what's going on with them. And when they do, you said it best, they start stuffing all this medication down your throat, which is going to make it even worse. So, you know, there's a lot that needs to be discussed when it comes to mental health, because mental health leads to a mental illness if it's not addressed.
Right.
Yes, because a lot of those drugs are antipsychotic, which means there are mind altering.
Exactly.
So it makes you think 10 different things at one time, literally.
You said something about suicide, and I do want to point out that the African American community, the African community, we have the lowest rate of suicide across the board. So a lot of people may say, oh, people in poverty commit suicide. It's not really a poverty thing. If anything, it's a rich thing, and they can, you know what I'm saying? But I do also, at the same time, I want to say we are killing ourselves at a higher rate than anybody else
because of our
habits and the things that we do. And like you say, with the with our youngsters on these drugs and they're self-medicating and all these drugs in our community. So, you know, you're almost dead. You're almost worthless because all you do is pop pills all day and you really not going to be able to do anything. So we do, what's my word for it? We do detrimental things to our health.
That's
right. It's almost like, you know, we just don't care about it. We won't kill ourselves, but we just don't care about ourselves. I don't care if I die. It's almost that type of attitude
in
our community.
So, absolutely,
and like you say, back to the psychiatrist and psychologist, 2% are black, and it across the board with our mental health professionals.
That's right.
With that being said, some of those people may not even be culturally competent enough to deal with us and our youth. You know, they might mistake our aggressiveness or the way we talk or us getting loud or our body language for aggressiveness, and it's not. It's just that we're telling a story, and I like to move my arms around, and I like to get loud, and I like to be animated, but you might take that, and they do it with me all the time today. When I go places, I sweat a lot. So, you know, especially, you know, I might, if I get irritated or I get, you know, I start sweating, and they mistake that for anger. He was angry? He was sweating? No. I was sweating because I'm a sweating person, and I do have a problem with you, and I hadn't raised my voice or nothing, but just because I'm big and black, you assume that I was angry, or you assume
aggressive
I had a problem with you.
Angry and all of that.
Yeah,
I get accused of that, too.
And I'm
very expressive, so yeah.
And that's just not the case. I'm not an angry. I've been through so much. It's hardly you. Most people would never see me angry because I've been through so many different things. It's like, no, you can't get me angry. You tried, but it's not going to work. And luckily, I have a beautiful family to make my image a little bit softer. So when they do see my wife, my beautiful wife, smiling, coming, you know, talking nice, and, you know, they say, oh, okay, he's not that bad. Or, oh, okay, right. He got his three kids, and they cool, he's not that bad. But, you know, by myself, the way I look when I go places, or if I have a problem, you know, and I'm trying to address my day, he's mad, and he's angry, he's right here in my face. It's like, no, this is
right.
So, and that's the same thing that goes on in our society, especially with the police. The police have contact with our youth, and this might be the first time they ever had contact with a black person is them as a police, and they don't understand us. So our
that's
body
right.
language can be mistaken for something else.
Let me hit on the police situation, because we know, like, majority of them come from the military, which means a lot of them suffer from PTSD. Which means they have been trained to kill. Let's not forget that. They have, I mean, I hate to say it, but I have military in my family too, but they are killing kids and women and all that stuff. That's why it's not hard for them to do that over here.
That's
they
right.
are scared when you flinch and do stuff from their PTSD, and they are fearful for all their lives.
That's
I do
right.
believe
they
that.
Are.
But they
yeah.
need to be trained, you know, or not even have that job maybe unless you've been out of the military for like a year or two. You know what I'm saying? Like have some type of criteria, because that's where a lot of this killing, senseless killing is coming from. Mental illness. Like I said, we're back to the same thing. Mental illness.
Mental illness. Absolutely.
And you know what I'm gonna use the time, but you know what pisses me off like real bad? Is that I talked about it a little bit last week, is that mental illness is an issue across the board. I like to talk about it in the African-American community or the descendants of Africans. I like to talk about it in our community because it has a certain effect on us. But across the board, it's an issue. And what pisses me off is that
yes, it is.
The only time these politicians and our leaders talk about it is when there's a mass shooting done predominantly by a white male. Then they talk about mental health, and they talk about it. They talk about it for about 2 or 3 days, and then they just forget about it. Oh, we need laws, mental health this and mental health that. We need to stop letting people with mental health issues get guns. They talk about mental health for 2 or 3 seconds after a mass shooting, and then they just forget
right.
about it.
Right.
And they know it's an issue. You guys recognize that mental health is an issue, but the only time you talk about it is when somebody does a shooting. So we need to, like I say, battle accountability, particularly white people doing shootings.
Yeah.
They don't say terror,
right.
they say mental health.
Right.
We need to, since we know that these politicians will talk about mental health, we need to be in their face telling them, man, we need mental health services in our community. And I don't want
that's
people
right.
labeled, and that's another thing, too. I don't want people labeled with, like, they have a mental issue if they go seek help. You know, so if I'm going to seek help saying I'm suffering from anxiety, I need somebody to talk to, or I'm suffering from a bout of depression, I shouldn't go into a database saying that I had mental health issues barring me from doing any of my I'm putting quotations, constitutional rights. You know,
right.
So it's so many different issues when it comes to that just hurts my soul. But we know that these politicians are talking about mental health. We need to make them talk about it more often. I didn't hear nothing about mental health during the presidency. I didn't hear nothing about mental health during the local election. But like I say, when this Vegas thing happened, oh, mental health this or mental health that and gun law this and gun law that. No, let's keep the conversation going and let's hold our, like I say, we're going to put this plan together, hold everybody accountable for this, for our mental health issues.
I agree. And I think that one of the most important things is that we have to stand up and let our voices be heard when we are killing each other too. We argue, fuss, and cry and kick and scream when somebody kills one of us, but we don't say anything when we killing each other. We just think it's a normal thing. The unfortunate thing is that I know that our community is suffering from a mental illness is because we think us killing each other is a normal. It's become a normal. We gotten used to it. It's like it's okay to do that. But if the white cop kill us or somebody come from the outside and kill us, we got to protest, we got to march, we got mm-hmm. to holler to the top of our lungs, and we want to hold somebody accountable, point some fingers. But when the brothers killing each other, killing another brother, we think that that's just the everyday situation, and we blow that off like it's nothing. And we're talking about from the leaders, from the White House to the Poe House to the crack house to the alcohol to all of it. everybody just turns and looks the other way as if it's okay. Well, we used to that. It's all right. It's not all right, people.
Right.
None of it is all right. It's not okay
right.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that are standing up telling you and saying that it's not all right. I don't. It's okay that I got a bullseye on my back because I voice my opinion and I break chains. I'm okay with that.
Uh-huh.
As long as I'm being able to get out here and save a life, to bring somebody into the light about what's really going on, I'm okay with that. It's all right.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. It's about making some changes, holding people accountable, and moving forward in life and stop staying stagnant and sitting there like everything's okay. It's not okay. It's really
yes,
not okay
it's
no
not.
More.
It's not.
No.
It's not. And, you know, it's funny. We had this same conversation. I don't know if you know Reverend Auger from the United Methodist Church, but the little girl, Kaylon, that got shot, listen, like I said, 40 yards behind us, that was a week to the day, today, actually. And we were on the radio show, and it happened. And we, you know, we've been trying to get donations or whatever for this little party we want to have for. And I probably got 3 people to donate something. And it's like we do suffer from mental illness because, first of all, like you said, I guess people think this is just a normal thing for a child to get shot, which is not ever. Like, if I don't care where you live, it's not ever okay for that. But also, how we are just, like in little Hawaii, that was a year or two ago, and everybody's forgotten about that. The site where she was is forgotten about, it's abandoned, where the same situation can happen again, but at the same time, you had all these people flocking to the funeral, to the site, to all this. Like with little Kaylon last week, it's like, if she would have died, it would have been 1,000 people over here putting teddy bears and this and that over here, like, you know, but she survived, and we're trying to do something for her because she is going to suffer from the PTSD and the physical wounds and all this stuff, and we can't get support for that.
Right.
It's like we thrive off the drama.
Right.
Oh, yeah, we do, and we don't support each other. That's why there are no black
right.
businesses open and thriving, because we won't support them. We'll run out to to the Rothschild's place or the Rockefeller's place,
mm-hmm.
but we won't run down there to Bo and Sheena's place and get some good
right.
fresh vegetables. But we'll run over there
right.
to Publix and all these other stores, but we won't come to
right.
you. We go somewhere else because we just don't support you. We don't trust you. It ain't ours, so why we support
yeah.
them? We ain't did it. So, you know what I'm saying? My thing is that,
mm-hmm.
listen, you want better, do better. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You won't change, do something about it. Stop complaining about
right.
it and do something about it. I'm tired of people
right.
complaining about what's going on and you ain't doing nothing. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they used
yeah,
to always
yeah.
say, if you don't vote, you can't complain. If you ain't doing nothing,
right.
shut your mouth. Sit down and move
right.
out the way and let people that want to do something about it. Because there are people that
right.
want to do something, and we just need to bring all these people together. Because once you start seeing people doing something together, we can definitely change the way our communities are handled. We can change the way that people come into our communities and disrespect our young people. We can change all that. It's
right.
not hard to do.
Yeah.
It's not impossible to do. It can be done. You know, it's
it
just about
be
being. It, absolutely, brother. I agree. It will be done. And we're going to see it be done, too, you know,
yeah,
because it has to be done. We got to get back to growing our own food and getting our gardens back. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Grandmama and great-grandmama, that's all they believed in. You better sit down
right.
and pop them peas, boy. You know what I'm saying? You better
that's
get them peas and wash them and pop them. You better get over there and cut up them greens. I know about all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But we act like we can't teach our children that all they want is some food sacklers and some Zaxby's and some McDonald's
yeah, right.
and all of this garbage. But we ain't teaching
right.
them and educating them on how to take better care of themselves. You know what I'm saying? How to be entrepreneurs.
Right.
How to start your own
right.
business. You know? And do
exactly.
these type of things. They intelligent. Our young people are some of the most intelligent people on earth today. You know, but they
right.
just don't know it yet. Ain't nobody telling
exactly.
them that yet. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Their parents are dream killers. You know what I'm saying? They parents,
exactly.
a lot of their parents didn't do it, so they don't want their children to do it, which is one of the most stupidest thing I ever heard in my
right.
life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your child can get you out of poverty, but you holding them back because you selfish because he did it and you didn't do it. You understand?
Exactly.
So that is stupid to me. So we got to educate. Listen, it's. We got to deprogram our people and reprogram them
exactly.
back to where we supposed to be, who we are originally. We are original kings and queens. We all about wealthy. We all about rich. We know about all that. We know how to invent. Mm-hmm. We know how to create. We know how to build. We know how to start up businesses. We know how to advance business, elevate. We educated. We all of this, but we act like we scared to bring that out of us. We are afraid to bring it out of us, and we got to break them chains, man, and bust that wall down and say, see, this belongs to you. Do something with it.
Right.
Let's go. Let's
move
forward. You know, it don't take much.
It don't take much. It takes community. It takes community. It takes us empowering, and like I said, even if it's, even if we're lost, we should be empowering, putting everything we have into our kids to start building
and make it
better for the generations that's going to come after them. Because that's what other cultures have done. So now these kids coming up in other cultures, they already have it to where they're okay, and they can go explore other things. They can go explore
new instruments
and go to camps every week because they family built that wealth for them to do so. And like you say, a lot of our parents, is, like you say, dream killers. You know, a kid say, I'm interested in competitive swimming. You might be like, oh, get that out of here. That's not what our people do. Or I'm interested in hockey. We might not take the time to go take our kid to the hockey games and stuff like that. We volunteer at the park, and we help the kids with the homework. And most kids in elementary school, they give a folder, send it home, and have you, and parents are supposed to sign it every day, so on and so forth. Homework, so on and so forth. When the kids bring out their folders, like the parent hasn't been in a folder all year, hasn't signed nothing all year, and some of the homework has to be signed. You know, make sure your kid reads this twice and sign
it.
And like the parents don't even look in the kid's folder to see what's going on in school, and then probably a complaint when the kid gets a D or F in a class, and you haven't even showed any interest in even just the homework. So, like I say, it's up to us to empower our kids. It's definitely up to at least empower our kids and empower those and give those people the courage to be different and be outstanding. And don't shame them for it. You know, kids get shamed for being smart. I'm into robotics. You know, oh, you into that nerdy stuff. And, you know, kids get shamed by adults. I'm not even by their peers, by adults, you know, by parents. I teach kids stuff all the time. And they go home and tell the parents, they say, I'm going to tell my mama this, you know, especially about history and inventions and stuff like that. They're happy to tell their parents, but I can just imagine the responses that they get from their parents.
Exactly.
You know, about this and about that, or what this mean, or what the, you know, they always ask me what the aunt mean, or, you know, they see me with my Afro pitch and stuff like that. And I tell them what it means. I can imagine the responses back they get from the parents. I want to touch back on something you say. You're talking about people aren't enraged when anybody dies in their community, which is sad that we're desensitized to the violence in our community. And I do understand the proximity killing. You know, we are, you know, if we do have a problem with somebody, most likely it's going to be our neighbor. Most likely our neighbor looks like us, especially in Mobile. Mobile doesn't have a big gang problem. Most of the shootings that are done because I know you, you know me. We got a problem with each other. We get into an argument, and we can't exhibit conflict resolution. So a lot of this boils down to conflict resolution in our community with everybody. You know, I believe people should exercise their Second Amendment and protect yourself and have guns freely. You know, because we might have to protect ourselves from a bigger enemy than any one of us any given day, for sure. But I also believe that, you know, we should naturally, as a community, be exhibiting conflict resolution. Everybody, man, teaching our kids that, with my little son was talking about it today, teaching them the steps to take before you, you know, sometimes you do have to defend yourself with a fight or whatever, but you should take at least 4 or 5 steps to prevent this from getting to a physical altercation, let alone a gun battle of sorts. So I do want to say that it irks me also that people would only get outraged when a young brother, especially a youth, is murdered by a police or murdered by somebody outside of the community, but won't be enraged by a young brother that's 16 shooting another young 16-year-old and questioning where they got these guns from and questioning why they're even, you know, certain stuff like that. it's like, again, I guess it's up to us. And we try, man. We try to raise this awareness, and we know people, but it just seems like our people don't care. Like I say, they only care about the drama that surrounds the issue. So if there's some sort of drama, if we don't know who the shooter is, if it was a baby mama, brother, cousin, something involved with it, they stick around for the drama, and then as soon as there's no more drama surrounding it, everybody forgets about it. Like my wife brought up the Hawaii Robinson. When there was drama surrounding it, when it first happened, they couldn't find her. Then when they found her, and then the court, and then you had to wait a long time for the brother to go to trial and see if he did it or not in court. And there was always drama surrounding it. So after they said he did it and they put him in jail, now there's no more drama surrounding it. So we forget about it, you know, which is sad. And hopefully we're going to put something together so we can get that site going up. And I'm going to stop right here. I want to talk about that for a second. We're putting something together with some Native individuals from Pritchard, and we want to probably start collecting donations to put a garden and maybe a placard down where they found her body. Right now, and I'm gonna put it out there so if people get mad or whatever, but they were supposed to put a park in that field right there. Or, yeah, they were supposed to put a park there, but the church owns it. And the church, a church is a nonprofit organization that can accept donations and get a tax deductible, so they could easily get some funds to put a park right there, but they're holding out on it. They want the city to buy it from them and the city to put a park right there. So it's kind of like the loser, and like I say, people can fact check or whatever, but this is what's going on. So the loser in this is the community, because we forget about the issue, and after 5-6 years, you say, oh, that's just a sheep was found over there. Someone, no, let's put a park right there. Let's promote that we care about our kids so much that we would never forget about them. And anybody else who would ever dare try this, we're going to be on you faster than white on rice or whatever other cliche you could think of. You know, like, we're not going to accept this in our community. And just to show some respect to her, you know, I think of the anniversary, I think it came up recently. I think it's this month, actually. Maybe her birthday or something like that. Nobody's talking about it. We're not going to have a vigil light candle or that I know of. And anybody could call in and correct me and say, yes, we are having a vigil light, to represent her. But I haven't heard of anything, and the site looks horrible. You know, so I would like anybody who can do a slab of concrete out there. I want to get a plaque, raise some money for the plaque. And me and my wife, we'll love to plant a small little garden out there with some beautiful roses, some beautiful flowers or something for Hawaii. And like I said, I'm pretty sure the city won't care much about us using a little corner to do that. And as far as the church go, maybe we can motivate them to go ahead and start to develop a small little park right there in the name of Hawaii Robinson. So,
hey, man, the unfortunate thing is that we keeping it 100 on this show. Here's the unfortunate thing. If it ain't nothing in it for me, I ain't getting involved. If I can't get nothing out of it, I don't want to be a part of it. If it ain't going to benefit me, I don't want none of it. If it ain't going to put no spotlight on what I'm doing, I ain't touching it.
Yeah.
You know, ain't got nothing to do with me, so I ain't getting involved. That's how we think, and that's the unfortunate side. That's not the way I'm going to speak it like this. That's not the way it will continue to be, but that's just the way it is right now. I know the change is coming. I know that the change will be broken. I'm going to speak a positive to that. Whatever that we could do on this side to help things to move forward, we all in. The thing about it is that we got to be able to make sure that the people that are dedicated and serious about making changes. See, you know, there are people that don't mind just getting up there running their mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But just running your mouth means nothing. You got to put some action with that thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we willing to put some action to it. See, people told us that this, what we doing right now, wasn't going to work, brothers and sisters. It wasn't going to work. Nobody want to hear what you talking about. So, I didn't think it was going to work either, because if you keep telling the person something for so long, they will eventually start believing that. You know what I'm saying? So if you constantly telling your children that he's ignorant and he's stupid, you keep telling them that all the time, every day, he's going to start believing that he's ignorant and he's stupid and he ain't going to never be nothing because you done told him that. So if people that mean something to you start giving you negativity, you start believing negativity. So we bring in some mental awareness tonight. We want you to get involved in what we're doing. We'll have information coming up to you and coming to you about what's going on with this king and queen and what we're doing on this side. We're joining up to do things. We're going to make changes in our community. We're going to bring change to you. But most importantly, we're going to help to educate you. We're not trying to be mamas and daddies to you. We're trying to be teachers, educators for you. We're trying to educate you on what is real. And like the brother say, go and fact check for yourself. It's all out there. One thing that when man put the internet out there, he opened up the windows of information everywhere. So the information is out there. Go and read it for yourself. Go study it. Get educated. Stop using the internet for falsehoods and nonsense and start using it to educate yourself and your children. Because it's there. You can read about everything that we talk about. It's there. It's there. Your history is out there. They've tried to hide it from you. It's there now. You can read about who you are, where you come from. You are a king. You are a queen. Act like it.
Right.
Have some respect for yourself and your culture and who you are. We are powerful people. And it's time for us to stand up and act like powerful people and take back what is ours. They've stolen enough from us now. You can't steal from us no more. We through with your stealing, okay? Enough of the stealing now, you know?
That there is probably our number one solution to all these problems is getting back to the ways of old, getting back to the ways of community, getting back to the tribal life. And I'm not talking about going to the living huts and all that. No, I'm talking about the tribal life as a community, as in everybody's responsible for everybody. You know, if we have somebody hungry in our community, they need to be fed. You know,
we need to feed them.
If we revert back to our ways and get away from a lot of these ways of the Europeans, we'll build our community naturally. Like you said, brother, we are our elders. We had a conversation about our elders today. A lot of people are quick to kick the elders to the curb, put them in this home, put them in that home. Our elders are a burden on us. They were telling us about a 90-year-old who got into a car accident. I think it was this weekend off of Beauregard. And, you know, it's like, and it was like, he shouldn't have been driving in the first place. And I'm like, man, I agree. Somebody should have been driving him around or with him and able to assist him. He shouldn't have had the burden of having to drive himself to the doctor, to the store, wherever he was at, because we should have been there for him as a community. So we need to get back to our village. You know, we need to get back to our tribe. We need to get back to that sense in our community. Everybody responsible for everybody. Also, with mental health, one of the things that helps our brothers and sisters the most in our communities, our black people, is group therapy. Group therapy helps. You know, that's one of the number one things that anybody listening out there, you can do for your brother and sister is have some group therapy. Get together and talk about issues with no judgment. No judgment. If you have the tendency to judge, then you shouldn't be trying to help people, but you can still involve yourself with the group. But no judgment, because the people bring up all types of information that they've been holding in for so long that they're embarrassed about, that they're shameful of, the reason they're holding it in. So if you're being judgmental, that hinders, you know, part of the problem. But group therapy, leaders out there, group therapy. Talk to your sisters. Talk to the young brothers. Talk to them about their mental health. Talk to them about their day. Talk to them about everything. And that's the number one thing that we all can do to help each other, is just to open up the door and start talking about it. Because you never know who you're going through the same thing you're going through.
That's right.
You never know. So talk about it. Create youth groups. Peer group sessions are wonderful too. You know, giving high school students a topic, putting them in a room together, letting them talk it out. Especially in our communities, a lot of us suffer from the same things. You know, poverty, lack of money, poor schools. You know, let our youth talk about it. Let them talk it out. So that's one of the number one things we can do. And we're trying to get back to the village life. Nobody,
let's get to it.
In our community, nobody who we say we're share culture with in our community should go without anything that we got. You know,
that's right.
Getting back to that, everybody's problem is my problem. But we
that's
have
right.
to. It's hard. One thing we suffer from, brothers, too, is it's kind of sometimes it's hard fighting for people, being on the front line, putting your sacrifice in ourselves at times for the people, and the people don't even care. Or they don't even show any interest in the issue that we're out here fighting for, even though that issue
right.
may be super important.
I agree.
And that kind of makes us like, man, you know, it kind of gives us a doubt like, man, I'm tired. You tired, babe? You know, we're tired of being out here on the front line, tired of doing events, trying to help clothe the people, or feed the people, or educate the people, and ain't nobody coming. You know, it's like, you know, or the people just don't see what you see. We're saying, like, build your youth. And like I say, you know, people might look at us crazy. My wife, King, talking about king and queen, like, why are you calling me that? Or looking, you know, there's a reason behind that, not just because I'm giving you a false ego of your king or your queen, but no, I'm trying to boost your confidence and let you know where we came from, what we're
came
capable
from.
Of. You know, that has to do with the mental. So when people don't see kind of like what we see and we start doubting, like, it's hard for us, you know. And we struggle to get through because, you know, if Martin Luther King was doing it during the civil rights movement, if he had just wanted to start a movement, but nobody wanted to hop on a movement, it would have been a failed movement before it even started. And you know how
That's
impactful
right.
that movement was. So it's like, man, to the people out there, don't wait till something hits close to home to you to want to make a difference about it.
That's
Don't
right.
wait till one of your family members gets AIDS and then you want to talk about AIDS awareness. We know Mobile County and Jefferson County has the highest rate of AIDS across the board in Alabama. So, you know, we know that there's senseless murders with our youth, you know, and with 25-year-olds and down, we know that they are here killing each other at an alarming rate, and we do know solutions that help with that. And don't wait till it's your little nephew, your little cousin, your little sister, your little brother, your dad, your mom that is affected by this gun violence or this senseless violence to speak up about it, to go represent, to help somebody else's mission that has a mission to bring awareness to it. And like I say, it's not always about the fun. It's about getting your boots on the ground, telling somebody, you know, during Domestic Violence Month or getting involved in a domestic violence event, Stop the Violence event, build any type of event or community event by going in community. We all need to be
right.
out there showing our community love. Whatever
That's
the event
right.
may be, we need to be out there showing love. And if you have a mission, you need to be out there with your mission because the people out there, you know. So if it's your mission to bring love across the board, you should be out there spreading love. If it's your mission to bring fresh fruits and vegetables and teach people how to healthy live, this is an opportunity, you know. So the more community is the key to our issue. And stop waiting till something happens and letting your emotions, because you're just going off of emotions, and actually do it to really want to make a change in the community or to make a difference. We're too reactive. Our people are react to whatever the media puts out there, whatever the community, whatever's trending, we just react to that instead of making solutions. Like I say, like we're going to do, we're going to make some solutions, and one of the solutions is tribe, like making solutions to our problems, getting solutions, getting our boots on the ground.
That's
getting
right.
people involved. So,
and let's do it.
It's all about education, educating ourselves, and even to go to education. It's amazing, like I said, those generational curses that we talked about, how we may not even be getting through to some people because they don't know how to process the information that, you know, we are giving them, critically thinking and all that. That has a lot to do with our mental health. You know, I get on Facebook and I see people misspelling, and I think, you know, maybe it's just, you know, we all do it, just typing too fast, da 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 da. But when you go months and months time and you're constantly spelling the wrong word wrong and the wrong text and the wrong, you know, and it's like, this is a problem.
Right.
And then not only that, a lot of these people, 9 times out of 10, they have children.
Yeah.
That you're speaking to, like you said, back to the Ebonics and this, and that, and it's harder for them to even catch up. Like I said, they already have a hurdle in front of them.
That's right.
Yeah, because we're passing each other. Like I said, so we, like I said, this mental health thing is real deep. Like I said, this book we're reading, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, is it makes a whole lot of sense because we see it every day. All the things
every
we're
day.
Talking about.
Wow.
Yep.
So that means that our conversation needs to continue on every day. We need to be talking these things out every day. Every day.
Yeah.
Every day, all day. That old saying, it takes a village. People miss that.
Yeah.
They miss that saying and what it meant. You know, you actually come from ancestors of villages. So, you know, that's what you come from. That's where your genetics are tied into and intertwined into the village. So, you know, we have to get back to educating and teaching our young people, even our adults, because the school system is not teaching them this. So we definitely have to we have to educate. So, you know, that's
the
much
school,
as I can say.
The schools literally promote or only show white dominance. I'm not even going to say white supremacy, just white dominance. And
right.
I look up, and I'm pretty sure you go through it too, and you'd be like, you look up different things, or you go hitting Wikipedia up, you know, hitting Google up, looking up things of history, and you finding out so many wonderful things, and you're like, man, how come they never mentioned this in school?
Exactly.
Why didn't they ever say this, or why didn't they take the time? But they make sure they get the founding fathers. They make sure they paint them in the most positive light ever as heroes, and they don't even tell their atrocity stories. They're slave owner type stories. So it's like everything's against us, brother. And only when we systematically, and that our kids don't see value in themselves at school, and as far as history goes, as far as literature goes. As far as the little signs that they got up, you know, even at my kid's school, it's probably 90-something percent black, 98% black. But when I look at the mascot, you know, the mascot doesn't match. The decorations don't match. You know, when they get the little kids and they go buy decorations, none of that matches. When they talk about history, the history doesn't match except for 1 month. And you can
possibly
give me a... Give me my whole history, or even a
in 28 days.
In 28 days, you know, even though you do a Black History Project and all that stuff, that's awesome. But that should be every month. You know, that should be every day.
Hey man, I'm black every day. I don't get to take this off and put it back on.
Right, exactly. So and then with the stuff that they do say about the black people is negative things. You know, let's talk about slavery. Let's talk about how your people was always oppressed. Let's talk about they don't associate us with the great kings and queens the tribes of America, the native, or, you know, they don't connect us with all that good, beautiful stuff, you know?
No, they don't.
So
they don't.
It's up to us to
it's
start.
Up to us.
We were talking, I was reading about the pyramids here in America, and I don't want to slaughter the name of the tribes, the Indian tribes, but the Indian tribes that on the Mississippi River, plenty of Indian tribes with civilizations, and they never talked about that in the history books. And I was talking to my wife, like, why wouldn't they talk about that? You know, tribes of civilization here in America.
Because they killed them too. They ain't gonna tell you.
Yeah,
they killed
exactly.
All of them.
Exactly. So I said,
murdered
them. Our conclusion was that when these mostly white, predominantly white men get together and say what the texts are going to be in our kids' schools, and they vote on what's going to go in these textbooks, they're going to paint themselves and their people in the most positive light ever, and paint everybody else in kind of a negative light. They're going to always be the heroes when they're writing history. So, I mean,
we the villains.
It's up to us to put our kids in, and we might not be educated on it. It's me and my wife are talking about too. We do a lot of studying and we pick up on a lot of things, but it's so many things that we'll never learn that our kids need to learn, you know? So, again, putting that village around your kids. So when my kids are hanging out with your kids or you with my kids, you're able to teach them something that I didn't even know. Or you teaching me something I could teach my kids because I never had time to study about this. or about that, but you have.
Right.
So let's trade knowledge. Let's trade stories, you know.
Exactly.
I teach your kids a little bit of that. You take your kids to this program, and that's what other cultures are able to do. Put their kids in, like I say, the summer camps for this summer, football camp, basketball camp, this camp, science camp, and that's what we need to start doing as a village. I'm gonna let you go over here and learn a little bit about this. I'm gonna let you go over here and learn a little bit about this. I'm gonna let you learn these instruments, this, where this came from, the history of this. So I mean, it's so maddening because they put us so far behind that we're trying to play catch up, or we still got people talking about fighting for equality in 2017. We just want equal rights.
And that's the sad part about
even if we had equal rights, our people are so far behind economically, systematically been put so far behind economically that we'll forever be behind. You know, we need more than our equal rights, man. We need our own nation to be able to determine our own outcomes, you know. So I don't want to get into that, but definitely, man, we need our people to come together and unify and start demanding better in our community so we can have better. There should be no reason anybody who needs some mental health attention shouldn't be able to get it in their community that is for free. You know, at least be able to talk to somebody for free. A hotline where I can call from culturally kind. It could be a hotline. It could be people who answer me. They got a special phone and they know to answer this phone if it's ringing. And they wake up in the middle of the night and even talk to somebody just because they need to be talked to. That's culturally competent, and just knowing somebody's there. So
that's right.
There's no good shit going on in our community. So many solutions
to
that. And hopefully, like I said, we can lead the charge on a lot of these issues.
And we will. We're going to say it and we're going to end it just like that. And we will. We will start and come up with those solutions right here. We will do that. We will do that. We're going to speak and touch and agree, and we're going to go forward with that because it's time. There's no reason why we should be talking about some of the things we're talking about in 2017. You just said that. I totally agree. And we need to make those changes. We need to make it known that we are going to make those changes. We're not afraid to stand up to make those changes. We're here, and ain't nothing you can do about it but listen, because you're going to have to listen to us because we're coming, and we're coming intelligently. We're not coming all ignorant and stupid. We coming with the brain that we were blessed with, and we're going to come with it because we got knowledge, we got intelligence, and we're going to use it. We're going to start using it, and we're going to educate our people on how to use it because it's in them, and they know it's in them, and they just don't know how to bring it out of them, and we're going to help them to bring it out of them. We're not going to suffer anymore because you want us to suffer. Only reason now, if we're suffering because of our own selves now. You want us to suffer, but we don't want to suffer no more, and we're going to stop you from making us suffer. You've done it for over 500 years now. Forget 400. We into 500 years, and enough is enough. We done had enough of that now. We've had enough of that. And, y'all, we out of time for tonight, and we really enjoyed it. King and Queen, Bo and Sheena, man, y'all, man, let me tell y'all something. Y'all are awesome. I want to say this to the whole world wide web. Y'all are awesome, and I am just thankful that I am having a privilege to be involved with y'all and be a part of your village and, you know, educating the people and giving you a platform to help to educate the people. Let's turn this up. Let's move it forward. Whatever that we can do on this side with Young Adults Talk, you let us know, and we will make sure to get it done. The good part about it is y'all know how to find me. You know where I am. So let's move this forward. Matter of fact, we got to take this to the next level. We got to talk off mic about some other things that I want to get y'all involved with just on WGOK. I think that y'all need to be on there once a week, just like you're here once a week. Brother Clayton comes on every Monday and talk about the health side of things, but we need to add something else to that health, because you can't be physically healthy until you're mentally healthy.
It ain't
gonna happen. You listen, even if you want to build all the muscles in the world, you got to be mentally ready to go into that physically to take that challenge on. It's a mental. This is all about your mental health, and we're going to address this. We'll talk on mic. I don't need to share this with nobody else. Yeah.
Right.
You need the brain power to actually have the physical power. You ain't got no brain power, you can't have no physical power. It's impossible to have it. Because it's impossible. Everything starts in the brain. You got to think about it, analyze it, you know, let it marinate. All of it starts in the brain. So, you know, we're going to get to that, and let's make sure that we move forward in what we're doing. Bo and Sheena Williams, thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for y'all's Healthy Monday and mental illness. Let's continue this conversation next Monday, because we can talk about this all day. There's plenty more to talk about. And next week, we'll be back with Bo and Sheena Williams. They're going to have more to talk about, and be listening in. King and Queen, thank you. Love you much, and we'll see you next week.
See you later.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and tears here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Talk to me so you can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right on. Right on.
Listening to Breaking Chains with Healthy Monday on YAT Radio.
Tune in next week, same time.
Go to our website,
blogtalkradio.com/YAT Radio, or call in
58. 58- 657-9137.
It's Breaking Chain, YAT Radio, where we leave a mark that can't be erased by breaking the chains of silence.